Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It's the IT Babble podcast, episode 169. 169. And as always, I'm joined by my good friend, Tony DiPreto. Tony, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Going into, like, I think the second full week of school, but I've been at school for a while, like, before the kids came, so, like, my timeline's different. There's, you know, always some interesting stuff to talk about, some things I want to talk about that I can't.
Same here.
Yeah, so I'll try to, you know, over time, create stories about other people, and that's how I'll do it.
Sounds like a Reader's Digest. It's going to be great.
That's right.
We're starting our third week of school, and it's been really busy, but overall the start of the school has been pretty successful. So I'm pretty happy with
Somebody sent me a message unrelated to technology, and I gave them some advice, and I'd like to put that advice out there for people who have an advisory or a homeroom.
All right, let's do it. Yeah.
All right. I know that for the majority of people listening, in your heart, you hate your advisory in your homeroom. I know it. You don't hate it, but, like, you don't really see a huge benefit because when the kids come in, whenever it is, they're disengaged. If it's in the morning, they're asleep. If it's in the afternoon, they're tired. Yeah. And I get it. And everyone's like, oh, we're going to give you an advisory curriculum to use. And they don't. And it's horrible. And the advisory curriculum is never, it's almost, it like basically stops at grade six and it's sold through high school. And it's boring. So here's my advice. Homeroom challenge. That's what I used to call it. I still think it works. Just come up with crazy stuff for the kids to do and have ridiculous prizes. And if some kids don't want to participate, that's fine. But it could even be like, okay, solve this puzzle, and then you'll get a room number. And that's another teacher's room, and it's in the morning, and they have homeroom, but just don't care. And send the kids in there to, like, find something that you hid the night before. Like, do stuff like that. And it will get your kids, like, motivated and thinking. Just get their brains working. And then build some rapport. And then hopefully if they ever have a problem, they will talk to you in private when it's not advisory. Because that's really the point. I mean, really, it's, you know, the kids I've had good luck with advisory, it wasn't an advisory. Like, we just got along. And when they had a real problem, they would email me and say, I need to talk to you about something. And we didn't talk during advisory because it's full of other kids. Yeah. We had to, you know, they made an appointment. Or their parents would call me like, hey, you know, you're not her teacher, but, like, she really likes you as her advisory teacher, and I need to ask you a question. So you can build that rapport by just, like, having fun and – I don't know, maybe someone will tell you you have to keep the kids in the classroom. But, like, if no one said that you have to, just, like, send them out. Like, there's going to be some empty lockers or something. You can use those to stash stuff. I don't know. Morse code, Braille, whatever you can think of. Just, like, work with their minds, like, whenever you have them. Create a mystery. Have them solve it. I think it's just a better way than just having them come in and stare at their phones and, you know, reading, like, the bulletin to them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah.
And don't bribe them on the first day because.
Then you got to, like, bribe them every other. You have to give.
Every day. Candy. You can't bring in candy and muffins and be like, hey, love me. And the next day, they're going to be like, hey, where's the candy and muffins? We're done with you. You can't do that.
Yeah. A colleague that we both know who works with me now and used to work with you, she has an advisory this year. And on the first day, she had candy, and then by the end of the week, the candy was gone. And so the kids are like, wait, where's the candy at? You don't have candy for us today? And it's like, it's over. It's like, game on. That's all that advisory is. It's candy time. And there's, you know, that's it. There's going to be nothing else. Yeah.
It's not good. You know, if you want to do food and advisory, everybody needs to bring something. Yeah. That's the rule.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Everybody contributes. The kids need to bring something.
I
did that once, and one of the kids, their mom used to own a restaurant, and the mom actually stayed up and made like four dishes for the advisory. So the next morning we had all this food. I was like, oh, it's amazing. So you never know what you're going to get.
That's true. That's true.
So anyway, I just wanted to cover that for that person that sent me a message.
That's really good. That's excellent advice. I'm going to get completely off topic of education and say Andrew Luck, the starting quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, retired from football today at the age of 29. Retired.
Well, he probably saved his life.
Yeah, he had been playing. There was one year he missed the entire season. He missed the whole season due to an injury that was just lingering, and he even went to Europe for treatment.
Stem cells.
I think so. But so there's two thoughts here. There's one thought of fans who are really upset with him because they thought he was going to be there for a while, so they're really angry. They think that he betrayed the team and the city. And then you have another group of people who are like, well, gosh, I don't want this guy to be, you know, a vegetable by the time he's 45. And he just knew it was time to walk away. But I think that he was just personally, not just the injuries, but just burned out, just kind of burned out on football.
Well, I think it's important. Like, I'm just looking this up. He has a reported net worth of almost $100 million. Mm-hmm. He probably grew up like middle class or less. Like, he's never going to spend all that money unless he's crazy. And you know, every year, It's crazy. It's like every year professional football takes like 3 or 4 years off your life expectancy.
Oh, I can.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's something crazy like that. I'll have to look it up. Don't quote me, but it's bad. And the injuries that you get to your brain, if you're a quarterback, they never really heal.
No,
they just get worse over time.
Irreversible. Yep. Yeah.
So maybe he just looked around at his family and he was like, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. And he's a smart guy, and he's, you know, pretty soft-spoken. There's never really drama that surrounds him or anything of that nature. And he's, you know, he went to Stanford, and, you know, he loves reading and stuff. So I'm sure he's going to have a career after football, you know, maybe not even associated with football. So,
He'll be a good announcer, or he's going to become like an offensive coordinator or something.
Yeah, maybe that.
If he wants to work.
I don't think he'll be an announcer. He has a really doofy voice. He's got a real strange voice. He doesn't sound good on TV.
Maybe he could be on America Ninja Warrior.
Oh, now that's something that he could, yeah, for sure. For sure, I like that. I like that idea. But anyway, it was big news. It's just big news. Big event today here in Indiana. Everybody's talking about it, so.
Well, I think it's important.
Yeah, I do too. The Colts are a big part of Indianapolis, and certainly it brings in a tremendous amount of revenue to the city. And so I thought it was just important now. So they had a really good year last year, and everybody had high hopes this year. And now there's a lot of doubt. So
maybe he could go to Cincinnati, and they could just let him play quarterback by throwing the ball from the stands. Like, I think it would probably be more effective than what the Bengals have done in the last decade. So, you know, just see if they look, he's not going to run. You can't sack him, but he's also going to be throwing the ball like 80 yards, like further than most people have to.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to try it?
Probably has a lot of interceptions, but like you said,
he'll throw it seated. He's not even allowed to stand.
I don't know if that would help the Bengals point in time, Tony, though, but it's a good idea. It's a good idea. Anyway, on today's show, we're going to talk about your latest post about when Turnitin fails. I thought that was very interesting. But I just want to start off with, I wrote a post 2 weeks ago about presenting a slideshow, keep it brief. And beginning of the year, you see lots and lots of slideshows. I can't take it, Tony. I'm going to snap.
So you notice, like, I put something on about presentation advice because this guy I work with, he came up to me and he's like, you're going to be helping out, you know, with technology and stuff. I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, what should I use for presentations? I don't really know. Like, I like to keep it really simple. I just like to have a slide up that's basically like a picture or a phrase, and then that's the something I discuss, and I have my notes. And, you know, he's actually, and for real, like he's really interested in using something like Prezi. Mm-hmm. He personally likes it. He's used it in the past. He wants me to look into getting like a subscription so that he can use it in class. I know it's a much more engaging than PowerPoint. And then I had someone else come up to me and say that they kind of felt guilty. I don't know where this came from. They're like, yeah, I just haven't been able to get into Keynote. I'm like, I don't know anyone who said anything about Keynote. Did somebody tell you you had to use it? So I guess the only advice I have is if there's a medium that you like to work in, like, for example, I make a lot of stuff in iMovie. I make it quickly, but I've got everything set up so it's easy for me to cut. It's easy for me to title. And the audio quality that I'm producing is actually really good. And that's the most important thing. I like iMovie as a tool for day-to-day work. Some people hate it. And they're like, no, I just want to use Adobe Premiere. I think as long as you're meeting your objective and not putting in too much time, this is where sometimes I get worried about teachers. Like, if this guy is teaching like a full load, how much time is Prezi going to take him? And is he going to get to a point where he's burnt out and then his content is all in Prezi?
It's a valid point. It's a very valid point.
What happened, Patrick? I'm not a Prezi user. I really think I tested it a long time ago when it first came out. Have you used it? Do you know, like, if you put a bunch of stuff in Prezi, can you download it later in another format?
You can download it as a PDF. Instead of, so it won't swoop or anything, but each and every, I'm putting this in air quotes, slide will be its own PDF. So none of the animation would be there. But another thing that Prezi can do is that you can do voiceover with it, which is kind of nice. And I know you can.
Yeah, he was mentioning something like that too, that it has, you know, more features. I think really it's just the time commitment. If you feel like you have the time commitment, the reason I'm saying that is if you're working with an audience, it doesn't matter who it is, and you're meeting them on a regular basis, and you start out doing amazing, engaging stuff with Prezi, and 6 months later, you're like, I don't have time to do this anymore, and you drop down to, like, simple PowerPoint, that's actually, I think, a problem.
Yeah.
Whatever you start with, you need to maintain that or exceed it. It needs to grow with your practice, or you just need to keep it standard. I really sometimes want to make my presentations a lot better, but I usually don't have a lot of time.
No. When I'm doing, I don't have to make many presentations. Usually it's the beginning of the year, or it's for the, for an admin meeting, and when I know it's a presentation, like a formal presentation, I will put lots of hours into it and practice it and refine it over and over again. But if I'm presenting something every day to my students, it would be just like you said. It would just be usually one slide with kind of our objectives. Like, here's what we're doing, and that's it.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean
to
interrupt you.
No, that's okay.
I like to use Google Slides, and I like to use PowerPoint in the cloud. And here's the reason. They do have fewer features, but whoever's making those templates, just the stock templates, they've put a lot of time into readability. So the Google Slides templates, unless you do something crazy, all of them, students can read them from the back of the room.
Yep.
And I find the same thing with the PowerPoint online templates. There's not as many, but the fonts they choose and the colors they choose are easy to read, and you don't have to worry about that. If you just stick to the formatting, you can just put your content in. And I do really like that. That's something that I like, because I don't know if you've ever, like, you know, been given by your school, like, oh, here's our PowerPoint template, you got to use this for everything. And then you load it up and it's like, nobody can read this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a dark background with black font. And yeah. Another thing that I like to stay away from and tell people to stay away from is animations and transition animations. Just they're unnecessary. They're, you know, nobody is going to walk out of that room and be like, damn, did you see that fade? It faded from one slide to the next, man. How did he do that? Nobody says that. Nobody's like, did you see the words bounce onto the screen? Oh, man. No, it's just a distraction. It takes time to put it on there. Like you're saying, if you're teaching a full load, are you going to sit there and spend 30, 40 minutes trying to figure out how to animate the bullet points coming up? Or no, just stay away from it. And it's, yeah. Unnecessary. Just stay away from them.
But I guess if you could make a Prezi template, you could use over and over where you're just changing the content, but the swooping, is that what it's called, or the movement is about the same. Like, I think that would be fine. But you need to think long term, like, how am I going to keep doing this week after week?
Yeah. Yeah. And when I was teaching, well, like Photoshop, like I would make tutorial videos and it would take me a very long time to make a 5-minute video. Would usually take me about 2 hours to make.
Yeah.
That video, then I had a copy of it. It was on YouTube. I could put it on I could put it on the learning management system that we were using, which was Edmodo. And it worked. It was solid. It was really high quality. And I did that for various different units throughout the year. But it took me a lot of time to make those. It took me a tremendous amount of time.
Yeah. But then they're reusable. So yeah. You gain efficiency over time. And I think that's what we're saying. Like,
yeah.
Teachers always say they don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to grade. I don't have enough time to have meetings. So if you don't have enough time, I don't think that it makes that big of a difference. I think as a presenter, you've first got to work on your personal engagement with the students, the way you speak, move around the classroom, the way you set the classroom up. I think that is more important than the technology, yes. Just in my opinion.
Yes, that's way more important. Way, 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 way more important, for sure. For sure. So I think what we're telling people out there is just keep your keep the focus on the students and on the learning and not so much on the presentation of your slideshows or what information you're going to be discussing with them every day. Just put more emphasis on your lesson planning and not so much on the slideshow, the presentation kind of a thing. And if you do make a presentation, for God's sake, don't read the slides. Just don't. Save everybody.
Read Patrick's post. Like, read it. Follow those points. It's really, really comprehensive.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. No one wants to hear you read slides.
No, like, no, no.
Yeah, it's not an elementary school speech competition. It's not.
That's good. All right. You know what else they don't do in elementary school, Tony, is they don't use turnitin.com. So, but you wrote a good. It's true.
Good transition.
It's true. So thanks. So you wrote a post of When Turnitin Fails by Tony DePreto. There was some really interesting. Really interesting stuff there, and I do like the picture of the gnome.
Yeah,
that was good.
Trying to be uploaded.
Yeah,
ceramics final.
Can I upload this to the cloud?
Yeah. So, I don't know if people I had a conversation with a teacher last week who uses Turnitin, and we were talking about plagiarism, and I was kind of trying to explain to her that. Plagiarism is a lot different than it used to be, and that it's getting harder and harder to detect. And we were talking about a few different issues. And then I started thinking about something that happened to me in Korea, where a teacher came to me and she said, I'm not really sure what to do. I have a student who is somehow cheating on all their art projects. So we contacted the parents and said, what's this student doing? Like, after school, is she going to tutoring? And I was doing this in a very polite way, just trying to follow up because the student was having some issues in some other classes. And they're like, yeah, she's going here and she's going to a place that actually is helping her improve her art skills. Mm. So I'm like, really? And that's when we realized that whether she meant to or not. So here's what's important. I'm not saying the student walked in and said, make my art for me. But it is very hard to help someone and not influence their outcome if you're doing manual work. So in this case, this person was painting. And so the person is helping them, but they're not helping them with a just a random, hey, how about we paint a still life? This student brought in her rubric and a sample of what it's supposed to look like, because the teacher had given them a very detailed rubric and a picture of what it should look like if it looks correct. And so guess what the tutor did? They took that and said, okay, we're going to, let's just say it's an ocean landscape or whatever. We're going to make that. So when they're done with their tutoring in a week, that's the work they're going to submit. They're not actually going to go do it again by themselves.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that. I've seen it. I've had a student hand in when I was a teacher, an IB computer science project, and I know they didn't code it. And I wouldn't accept it. And I wouldn't submit it to the IB. They were furious, you know, because in their mind, they owned it. So they paid for it. And this is what I think a lot of people don't really understand. It's like, well, you know, we have an honor code and we have this, and we have that. It's like, yeah, but this student went out. Their parents knew what they were doing. They gave them money. They said, hey, can you help me with this computer programming assignment? This computer programmer helped them. The program works. They paid for it. They own it.
It's their.
It's no
IP,
one else's work.
Their intellectual.
It's their property. Intellectual property.
Yeah.
And the handbook isn't that specific. So when you get into all the different ways with, you know, project-based learning that you can cheat, it's pretty vast.
Oh yeah.
And you can't use services like Turnitin. Like maybe, like in fact, I would say like if a student wrote a summary for a project that they physically made, the summary is going to count, but it's not that many points. They're not going to have somebody write that for them. And you know, you're giving them, you know, one of my points was like, you're giving them all the tools they need, first of all, with tons and tons of detailed explanations. I keep seeing, you know, I looked up the term rubric to see what the original meaning was, where it all started.
Yeah.
It's supposed to just be an outline or a guide. Some of these rubrics I've been seeing on like, what is it? Teachers for Teachers or whatever.
Yeah. Teachers Pay Teachers.
They're like an A3 sheet, like landscape with like 50 points. I mean, they literally tell you every single thing you need to do to get an A.
And for people out there who are not familiar, A3 is like 11 by 17 in our American.
They're like
here.
Posters.
They're huge.
It's like a poster.
They're posters.
You do everything on this poster and you'll get an A. And that doesn't really leave a lot open, you know, for interpretation. And so I really think it hurts creativity and like the variety of projects you get out of students. And I do see some teachers running project planning courses and they want all the kids to produce something that's almost identical. And that also kind of leads into the whole, well, you know, they just want it to be like this. So it doesn't really matter if I make it or not.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really my choice. So I just started thinking about those types of things. And the pre-assessment is really important. Even in writing classes. So this is another thing. Like teachers are like, oh, we're going to use Turnitin. We'll catch all the kids cheating. I'm like, well, you don't really need Turnitin or any of these services for lower level courses. I would say like grade 9 to like through most of grade 11. If you're having the kids doing timed writing in class occasionally to test their level, this isn't about giving them a grade. It's like, okay, let's do timed writing. 10 minutes, here's the topic. You can read their voice, right? You can see how their language is developing. You can see if they're developing at all, if they're regressing, and you'll get a sense of their voice. And once you get a sense of their voice, it's going to be really hard for them to pass someone else's paper off. It's pretty old school, but I think it works really well. I do think for like final exams and stuff, and like I think the IB has like pushed most schools into having something like Turnitin for all their internal assessments. If they can check it, they have to check it, and they have to submit the Turnitin document to like the IB coordinator. I think that's becoming very standard, and I can understand that, but I think there's a bit of a dependency on it. And then for things that can't go to Turnitin, people have just kind of lost the skills for checking. You know, they're just not doing it, and they're not really thinking like, okay, how can you cheat on like a math internal assessment? Well, you go to a tutor. That's how you cheat. Like, it's not, the student can't do it. And the only way for you to know is to give them a simulation of the work that's scaled down and test their skills. Like maybe a math, like big math internal assessment for IB could take a student months to do. So it might be made up of 10 different things. Well, you choose two or three and you occasionally test those things. Make sure the kid can do it. If they can't do it, they need to learn how to do it. It's not about punishing them. It's about stopping them before they decide to cheat.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's yeah. Yeah, because you don't want them to feel like they have to cheat. Because if a student feels like they have to pass a class, if they have to do well on that, they will do whatever it takes to get the grade. It doesn't matter. And in their mind, it's a pragmatic decision. I have to get it done. I have to get this at least this grade or higher. Justify the means.
I think the most likely group of students to cheat are your academic high performers.
Yep.
They will cheat in courses like computer science and in art because they've taken those courses because they're usually electives and they think they're going to boost their GPA. And once they realize this is hard and I actually don't know how to do this and I can't reason my way through this. It's something I have to make with my hands. Once they realize that, they start to panic and they will, find a way. They've been working really, really hard. They've been accelerating in math, putting in all this effort, and now they're looking at they're worried about their GPA. And that's a whole other conversation, but they're stressed about their GPA and they will take any route they can find to not take a hit on their GPA.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's so important for college and university, admittance. So
it's just something to think about. If you're running project-based courses, you need to slow it down. At the beginning, do a little pre-assessment. If you're doing computer programming and you come up with something you want to do with the kids and you do a pre-assessment, you might find that your plan isn't going to work because they can already do it and you shouldn't let them do it twice, or it's too hard for them and they're not going to be able to do it and you need to scale it down. Like, that's why you should be doing this stuff anyway.
Yeah, I saw a guy who was teaching computer science and this was a summer like camp. So it wasn't even – so there was no grades or anything, but – At the end of the camp, I stopped him because they had to make a Simon game with Simon the game where the colors and the sounds and the patterns out of a Raspberry Pi and a breadboard with some LEDs. And so I asked him and I said, well, so how did it go? And he's like, oh, it went pretty well. I was like, how many people? I was like, so everybody was able to make the game? And he's like, no, only about and there was like 15 kids in there. And he's like, only about three of them were able to actually make the game on their own. Everybody else had to copy. And he's like, it's all right, though, because in copying it, they got to see what does work, and they were able to compare to their code, which was not working, and they were hopefully able to internalize and figure out, this doesn't work because of this, or, So he goes, it was just a learning experience, but... Yeah, it was just good. It was just good. Project-based, but of course there was no grade there, so no pressure. And he didn't seem to care if anybody was, copying other people's code. In fact, he kind of encouraged it at some points. I'm not saying people should cheat, but,
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, sometimes you need a mentor, somebody on a slightly higher level than you to kind of show you how it's done and to kind of guide you. But no, I just thought it was really interesting. Yeah, because is it cheating if they're going to a tutor? Is it cheating?
Yeah, I had another student last year who he went to this tutor. This tutor he went to was Australian, so he came in with this English paper. His English teacher knew that he didn't write it because there was all this, the English was really strange, and all the sources were from Australia.
Are you saying that Australians speak English strangely? You better be careful, Mr. DiPrato.
Just comparatively to the student, the English didn't match, right?
Yeah.
So his teacher was like, why are all your sources from, Australian news sources? And, he's like, oh, my tutor helped me. And he's like, well, part of your grade is to find sources. Your tutor just gave you sources. And the student was like, I didn't cheat. I went to a tutor. He gave me sources. I paid him for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's no, this kid got in trouble. Don't worry. Like it was, but the point is that the student, you know, I dealt with a lot of kids over the last few years who are lying and know they did something wrong. And I'm usually pretty good at telling. He was adamant. He's like, I did not cheat. Okay. I'm calling my parents. He was taking a stand. He's like, I didn't cheat. I went to a tutor, told him to help me, told him I needed sources, paid him. He gave me sources.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, technically in the real world outside of education, he owns them now.
Yeah.
Like in the real world, the student didn't do anything wrong. He paid for information and the information was given to him. And that was the contract. And that's the point. Like there's a gray line in how all of this works, how all of this intellectual property works.
Yeah. It's fascinating. 'Cause like you said, in the real world, that's how it works. You know, people collaborate with each other. People pay other people for services.
And let's take another step back. The tutor works for a company. The company is advertising this as a service. The company isn't small. Like this particular place he was going had multiple locations all around the country. Like this, you know, it's not like some, you know, like dark alley the kid's going to buy a paper.
Yeah.
He's going to, the place he went was about a 10-minute walk from the school on a main road with a big glass window, and you can see students in there getting tutored. Like, this isn't, you know, underground. This is in front of the school. This is right there.
And we have these places in America. One that I know of is called Sylvan Learning Center.
Yeah.
And
that's a big one.
Yeah, it's huge. It's in. We got one here in Indianapolis, I know, and they're all over the country, all over, more than 800 locations here. I'm just looking on their website, and what are they? They are a tutoring center. That's what they do.
Yep.
And on their website, it says improvement guaranteed kind of a thing. Like they actually guarantee better grades.
Yeah. Like it's a bigger problem than people realize it. And I think it confuses students. They're like, oh, I need help. I can go here. They're a company. We're paying them. Whatever we do there is fine. It's mm-hmm. not cheating.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a gray area. I think eventually there's going to be a high profile case for something like this. And I don't know how people, I think from an intellectual property standpoint, the student is right. I think signing an honor code is fine, but an honor code isn't like part of the legal system. And if the student's over 18 when it happens, like if they're 18 and this happens and they're in their senior year and they decide to actually use the legal system and say, okay, yeah, sign an honor code, but like this is the law in our country or in our state. And guess what? The honor code can't supersede it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that's happened on the down low, but I think I think more stuff's going to come out, mostly because of this like college cheating and all this. I think there's just more stories, right? Because these kind of stories will breed more stories like them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's generally how it works. But, it's, you know, are schools having these conversations with kids? Hey, guess what? We consider plagiarism.
What's that?
You know, give them the scenario. You go get help at a tutoring center. Great. They show you a skill. They cannot produce the work for you. You still have to do it. If you spend 6 hours a week in there making a painting, you can't turn that painting in. You still have to spend another 6 hours making the painting. Like, those things need to be very clear in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. It's such a gray area. Yeah. Yeah.
And
I can see a kid getting expelled or failing a class and then suing the school or the school district or the university and then probably winning.
And here's the worst double standard. The worst double standard is the SAT. So kids who have a lot of money and resources, they will take the SAT. So first they'll go to a tutoring center and tutor for the SAT. And then the tutoring centers, the good ones, will help them locate SATs that they can take regionally or that are kind of off the normal schedule. So they'll go in and, like, grade 10, take the SAT. And what the tutoring center teaches them is how to gauge their score. And the second they walk out of the test, they go online and they cancel the score. So it doesn't count against them. So what they do is, Patrick, they say, okay, you're in grade 10. You're going to take the SAT this year, and we're just going to study for the math part. So they study the math part. They don't study the other part. They go in and they practice the math. They get out of the test. They go online. They immediately cancel their score. And they're allowed to do that. And then in grade 11, they do it again, and they just focus on the English. And then they take the SAT a third time. And by that time, they've practiced these two sections. And so guess what happens? Their scores are amazing. They're coached through the whole process. They get out of the test, and they give immediate feedback to the tutoring center. The tutoring center collects data from all these kids coming out of tests and adjusts basically in real time their practices. Like, this is an industry, and they're allowed to do it. So, like, you're telling them they can't cheat on an art project?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're right. And all those SAT scores, that translates to scholarship money.
Yes. Scholarship money. You know, I don't think people realize if you have really good SAT scores, there's a lot of stuff on your high school transcript they don't even pay attention to.
No. They totally can ignore it.
So, I don't know. It's just more complicated. Like, I tried to write something brief that I thought some people might read, but it's just a lot more complicated than people realize.
Ah, it's interesting. I'm going to ask some people at my school what they think about this. And, yeah, I think this is a good topic there, Mr. DiPreto. Well done, sir.
I might be arrested. Somebody from SAT might be looking for me. The College Board is probably going to come after me now. We do not allow that. You're wrong. You can't prove it.
They'll be like, Mr. DiPreto, open up the door right now. Open up the door, sir.
I hope not. I hope they can't find me. I'm done ranting. All right.
That's good. So we don't have any more topics. That's it. We got through all of them. I thought they were good. I guess we can wrap up the show. What do you think? Do you have anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. Awesome. Well, it's Sunday here, so back to school tomorrow for you and I. And all of our listeners will probably get to hear the show on Monday. I'm going to post it up tomorrow. So I guess for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And keep on babbling out there, and we'll catch you on the next podcast.